Hey, Bible nerds, this is Dr. Manny Arango, and I'm your host for the Bible Department podcast powered by Arma. This podcast follows a Bible reading plan we created to help you read the entire Bible in a year. You can head to the show notes or thebibledepartment.com to download our reading plan and join the journey. To all my fellow pastors, I've got a question for you. Does your city know that your church exists? Listen, I get it. You're preaching, you're leading, you're discipling, you're doing ministry. We are in the same boat. And let's be honest, social media and marketing, not your strong suit, not mine either. And that's probably the last thing on your mind. And that's why we chose to partner with Church Candy Marketing for our church plant, The Garden. We out here, y'all. They help churches get more actual guests walking through the doors on Sunday without you or I having to stress over ads or algorithms or trying to crack the social media code. Right now, Church Candy is helping nearly 400 churches reach their communities with simple invite ads, and it works. It's super effective. I can tell you from firsthand experience. So if you're tired of being your city's best kept secret, how about you do this? Go to churchcandy.com/Manny and book a free consultation, book a discovery call. Their team will break it all down and show you how to start seeing new faces at your church this Sunday. I'm in the trenches with you, trying to grow the church. And how about we just start a whole campaign? No more empty churches. So let's partner with Church Candy and get our churches full for the glory of Jesus. Let's go. Family, we are in Luke chapter 10, 11, 12, and 13 today. Again, not gonna give you like in-depth teaching on all four of those chapters. Gonna like cover some context clues, some nerdy nuggets, a timeless truth. It's gonna be a big overview. So if you need to read the reading for today, then go ahead and read Luke chapter 10 all the way to chapter 13. You can pause this podcast and go read. I'll be right here when you get back. One of the parables, this section is going to have a ton of parables in it. And one of the parables that is just so Luke is the parable of the Good Samaritan. It starts in chapter 10, verse 25, and it says, "On one occasion, an expert in the law stood up to test Jesus. He said, 'What must I do to inherit eternal life?' 'What is written in the law?' Jesus replied. 'How do you read it?' So they're having this dialogue, and he gives the right answer. 'Love the Lord your God with all your heart and all your soul and all your strength and all your mind, and love your neighbor as yourself.' 'You have answered correctly,' Jesus said. 'Do this and you will live.' But he wanted to justify himself, so he asked Jesus, 'And who is my neighbor?' Which actually was the whole point of all of this. Who is my neighbor? Because Jesus, you're healing people that we don't really agree with. Like, you're doing a bunch of stuff. Like, you have inaugurated this inside-out kingdom. And this person who Jesus is talking to would be an insider, a traditional insider that is probably feeling pushed to the outskirts and not happy about everyone who's kind of being let in. So he has a question like, okay, who is my neighbor? I hear you, Jesus. Like, I know what the law says, but we don't define our neighbors as the same person. And so Jesus breaks out into this parable. He says, a man was going down from Jerusalem to Jericho when he was attacked by robbers. They stripped him of his clothes, beat him, went away, leaving him half dead. A priest happened to be going down the same road, but the priest didn't do anything. A Levite going down the same road didn't do anything. But a Samaritan came where the man was when he saw him, took pity on him. And of course, Jesus then says in verse 36, which of these do you think was a neighbor to the man who fell in the hands of robbers? The expert in the law can't even say the word Samaritan. This is a context clue. He said, the one who had mercy on him. The one who had mercy on him. He can't even bring himself to say the word Samaritan. So who are the Samaritans? It's funny. I feel like I keep making like racial references, but it's just kind of the world we live in. You know, I've been dreaming about planting a church for a long time. And I have a dear friends of me and Tia who like are on that journey with us. And they're like, yeah, we're going to go with you wherever it is that you guys plant a church. And so we've been kind of thinking through some cities, and that couple, the guy's name is Jesse and the And the wife's name is Sarah. Well, Jesse's white and Sarah's black. And so I was thinking about like Huntsville, Alabama, or like Jackson, Mississippi. And like, I was just kind of thinking about some like pretty, you know, deep South kind of vibes. And Jesse was like, dude, like if there's one thing that racist people hate more than black people, it's like white people who are like in interracial marriages. Like, dude, like I don't know if I feel safe in Jackson, Mississippi. And I'm like, you know what? That is so fair. And Jesse's words actually give us context for who the Samaritans are. If there's one thing that racist people hate more than the race of people that they hate, it's people from their race who marry people from the race of people that they hate. Jesse's words are very, very right. So who are the Samaritans? That's a great question. And why do the Jews see them as such outsiders? Why do the Jews hate this group of people so much? Why is there so much animosity? Well, if you remember, way back in the Old Testament, there are two nations that overthrow the people of Israel. The first is Babylon, and they go into exile, okay? And what happens is Babylon comes into Israel and takes the best and the brightest and brings them back to Babylon. Well, that's not how the Assyrians did exile. When the Assyrians exiled you, they left the least and the poorest of your people group in your country, and then they took your people and scattered them across their empire, and then they took random people from all over their empire and dumped them in your country. And so Samaritans are the product of mixed race intermarriages for centuries. Samaritans are people who are the result or the product of their Jewish great-great-great-grandparents being left in the land, and instead of only marrying other Jews, they married people that the Assyrians had taken from all over the empire and dumped in the land of Israel. Jews, full-blooded Jews, would call Samaritan half-breeds. They would call Samaritans all kinds of things that are just wicked and vile. In the same way, we can see in American history, racists in this country are not just evil and mean towards the race of people that they don't like, but they believe that their own race should be pure, that the blood should remain pure. This was at the core of the issue between Jews and Samaritans, that Samaritans were Jewish but not Jewish enough. And so they represent an outsider. They represent people who are not really on the inside. They're not given access to the temple the same way that a Jew would be given access to the temple, which means they're not given access to God. They're not given access to participate in all of the Jewish festivals and what it means to actually be a full-blooded, full-bred Jewish person. And right in the middle of this tension, the teacher of the law says, so who's my neighbor? And Jesus breaks out into the story about a Samaritan. This would have been jaw-dropping that a priest and a Levite are not the heroes of the story, but that a half-breed, half-blood Samaritan that we hate, that they are the hero of the story. This is so jarring for the man who's listening to this that he can't even bring himself to say the word Samaritan. He just says the one who had mercy on him. And this is our context clue for the day. Next, chapter 11, we get into Jesus' teaching on prayer. And Jesus doesn't say if you pray, he says when you pray. First thing that I want us to note is this, that Jesus had such a habit of praying, this is 11 verse 1, that Jesus had such a habit of praying that he doesn't have to sit his disciples down and say, hey, we're going to do a sermon series on prayer. This is what happened when he finished. One of the disciples said to him, Lord, teach us to pray. And so Jesus teaches them how to pray. On our Arma platform, I do a full breakdown of this prayer. Okay, there's a course, about a two-hour course on our platform called our prayer course. And I do a breakdown of this prayer, so I'm not going to go into depth. But no, the first thing that we need to know is that we're praying not to a judge, not to a cosmic God who's far away, but to our Father. So Jesus says, my job as the Son is to connect you, not just to me, but that I become the connection and through me, you find connection to the Father. Jesus then is going to give some really, like, I would say, like, key insight on how the kingdom of darkness works. In chapter 10, verse 17, Jesus knew their thoughts and said to them, any kingdom divided against itself will be ruined, and a house divided against itself will fall. If Satan is divided against himself, how can his kingdom stand? Which, wow. So we're saying that the kingdom of Satan is not divided. It's not divided. That the reason that the enemy can have so much power against you and I as believers is because the enemy's kingdom is not divided at all. And this is why Jesus said, my prayer is that you would be one. That Christian unity is actually a big, big deal. Because if we are trying to establish God's kingdom and we're divided, and we're trying to fight against a kingdom that's not divided, it's not a matter of whether or not God is strong or whether or not Jesus is mighty. It's really a matter of whether or not we have decided to fight and stand in unity with one another. And if you're a Christian anywhere, I don't care if you're a Catholic, a Methodist, a Lutheran, if you're a believer, we are family. And this is something that I think is really, really hard, especially in a world that is becoming more and more polarized by algorithms. It's so difficult, especially if you've been living in a Christian bubble for your whole life, to realize, oh, there are Christians who think differently about alcohol. There are Christians who think differently about communion. There are Christians who think differently than me about baptism. One of the things that I want to do on this podcast and on the Arma platform all the time is always celebrate the diversity that exists in the Christian community. Bible nerds, I have an announcement. My brand new book, Crushing Chaos, releases May of 2025 and pre-orders are officially open. When I began to learn Genesis in its proper context, I learned that the creation account is not primarily about God creating something out of nothing, but rather God bringing divine order to the chaos of the cosmos. That one nugget was a game changer for me because I've been preaching to all the kids in my youth group that peace was a solution for their anxiety. But really, God's solution to chaos is never peace, but rather order. Peace isn't something that you stumble into. It's something that you intentionally step into. And that starts with aligning your life with God's order. I think that this book is a game changer. It's nerdy, it's practical, it provides a very contextual understanding of the book of Genesis, and if you grab a copy, you'll learn why there's a huge dragon on the cover. Head to the link in the show notes to pre-order, or head to crushingchaos.com to see the really dope trailer that we made for this book. I think it's time for you to crush the chaos in your life, and that starts with grabbing a copy of this book. Now, back to the podcast. All right, we're going to move into chapter 12. We get a bunch of warnings, and this is really, really good place to tell you a nerdy nugget, okay? Luke is writing to a man by the name of Theophilus, so we always have to ask, who is the author and who is the audience? How does that context actually shape what's being written? He writes to a man by the name of Theophilus, which means wealth and money and finances is going to be a massive theme, especially in this middle chunk of the book. Luke is going to use stories of Jesus and parables of Jesus to challenge wealth, but he's also going to give a pretty balanced perspective on wealth because he is writing to someone who is wealthy. So we get this parable of the rich fool right here in the middle of the chapter. And Jesus is talking about, don't worry in verse 22. Therefore, I tell you, don't worry about your life, what you will eat, or about your body, what you will wear. For life is more than food, and the body is more than clothes. Consider the ravens. They do not sow or reap. They have no storeroom or barn, yet God feeds them. And how much more valuable you are than birds. One of the things that I love about church is the only place where people who come from the background of poverty and people who come from the background of wealth can actually cohabitate in the same space. It's what makes church like kind of an anomaly in terms of society, right? It's that two groups of people who represent way different walks of life aren't necessarily cross-pollinating in other areas of society, but church is the place where that does happen. Let's take my family, my mother, my dad, and my relatives that are older than me, all trapped in poverty, stuck in poverty. I'm probably first generation to break the cycle of poverty for my family. What makes my aunt, for instance, poor is not the amount of money that's in her bank account. but it is her relationships. She doesn't even know anyone who's an entrepreneur. She doesn't know anyone who is wealthy or from in a different class of society. And so for Luke, he's not just saying that money is evil and to be poor is good. He's actually saying that poverty doesn't define you and that money doesn't define you. And so Mary and Joseph are coming from a very, very poor background, but Theophilus is probably not poor, the person that the gospel is being written to. And the disciples are not poor. Remember way back when they had to feed the crowd and Jesus says, hey, give them something to eat. Their first idea is, should we go into town and buy some food? That's not the idea that like a poor person would have. It's the kind of idea that someone of means would have. Peter is not just a fisherman. He owns his fishing boats. Peter is actually a pretty wealthy individual. Levi, the tax collector, that would have been a wealthy individual. So Luke is going to actually provide a very nuanced picture of Jesus's concern or Jesus's teaching around money and around wealth. And the biggest lesson that I think we get from Jesus' teaching on finances is that wealth doesn't define you and poverty doesn't define you. But the kingdom is a place that people who are wealthy and people who are poor can come in and actually become brothers and sisters in Christ so that they begin to share all things in common. And not just share money in common, but share wisdom in common so that they can be everything that God has actually called them to be. Let's move into the last little nugget that I have for you. Jesus loves healing people on the Sabbath. That is going to be a massive theme. Jesus gives a bunch of parables, and by the time we get to the end of chapter 13, we get this in verse 34. Jerusalem, Jerusalem, you who kill the prophets and stone those who sent you, how often I've longed to gather your children together as a hen gathers her chicks under her wings, and you were not willing. Look, your house is left to you desolate. I tell you, you will not see me again until you say, blessed is the one who comes in the name of the Lord. So although Jesus has this heart for the outsider, he also has a strong love for Jerusalem. If there's two things that Jesus weeps over, it's cities and people. And so Jesus' heart, his affection is towards Jerusalem. And the reason that he can like try to get Israel to love the outsiders because he first loves Israel. And what is Israel's purpose? Well, when God calls Abraham, what does God say to Abraham, the father of the Jewish nation? Through you, all the nations will be blessed. Jesus is actually saying to Israel, you're not fulfilling your call. You're not fulfilling your purpose until God uses you to reach all the nations of the earth. Timeless truth that God does love the church. He does love me, but he loves me because he has purposed me to be his conduit of love to every single person around me. So his love for me doesn't stop with me. His love for me is actually something that is supposed to inspire me to get other people to fall in love with the God who has chosen me and loved me. All right, we got some context clues. We got nerdy nuggets. We got a timeless truth for the day. I'll see you right back here tomorrow. I'm so proud of you in the journey that you're on. We're about halfway through the book. We're a bit over the halfway point. So I'll see you here tomorrow. Let's keep trekking through the Gospel of Luke. I hope you're enjoying it. Peace. Thanks so much for joining us on the Bible Department podcast. You can find us online and learn more about the show at thebibledepartment.com and on Instagram at the Bible Department. If you enjoyed this episode and want to dive deeper into the Bible, you can get free access to our library of courses at thebibledepartment.com. We'll see you back here tomorrow.